we're gonna get.
Yeah, I guess this is it.
Are you making
that whiskey?
You know,
I have to check to see if I can sit down.
A chair.
You're supposed to be at the front table. Didn't even know it.
So,
good. How you doing?
Yes.
So, there's a Wayne France won't be chairing the meeting today. So, if it's all right with the members that are here, I'll go ahead and chair from the podium here. Okay. I'd like to call to order the April 25th, 2018 Shellfish Management Advisory Committee. It is 4:12 p.m. Thank you all for coming today. So there's really one main agenda item that we've come here to discuss today, and we had a similar agenda item at a similar time last April, and that's crossing of oyster sanctuaries. I forwarded a letter earlier to this day, and there's a copy there, two letters actually, one from Danny Marshall, who's the chair of the Agricultural Committee there in the House, and it's similar. We're here for the same similar reason as we were last year in terms of asked to address a bill that wasn't passed through the legislature, and to handle it here at VMRC and to get the advice of the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee on this bill. So it's sort of outlined there, and the gist of it is this House bill was introduced, and it was going to modify the Virginia Code Section 516, 28.2.516, which would allow, basically it would specify that people could cross oyster sanctuaries in a similar manner as they could any type of other oyster ground. So basically it was going to effectively undo the current VMRC regulation 650 that has a special protection in there for oyster sanctuaries. So the prohibition on having a hand scrape, dredge, or patent tong here would be preemptively, code would supersede our VMRC regulation. So basically you would be allowed to cross, if the bill proceeded, oyster sanctuaries, similar to the way you're allowed to proceed to and from your oyster ground or open harvest ground with dredge gear on board. So you couldn't just run around currently under the code with, unless you have a reason to go to with the dredge gear on board. So it would just basically make oyster sanctuaries the same as everywhere else, basically. So you'd be allowed to go as long as you had a permit to dredge or a license to dredge. Mm-hmm. So we were asked by, this letter was sent to the commissioner and asked for us to explore sort of more narrowly this time, not just oyster sanctuaries in general, but specifically the Rex Shoals Oyster Sanctuary there on the James River. And it's a little bit narrower of an ask this time. We were sort of, SMAC was asked, and the commission will address a potential permit option on whether or not anyone should be allowed to cross Rex Shoals. And if there is a permit issued, sort of I'd like SMAC to potentially work up some permit conditions on who would be allowed, what sort of steps they would have to take to ensure that you know, the resource was still safe. But I'm just going to work through a couple background slides here and then just kind of try to facilitate some discussion from the SMAC members here on which route to go and sort of present that to the commission for them to act on at a later date. So sort of try to facilitate some discussion here, and I'll get started to go through on that. We have Dan Dice on the phone. Don Porter may be calling in later, so we are short of our eight-person quorum currently. But we'll go ahead and, since we're here, go ahead and work through it. So this is our current regulation, and I want to highlight a couple points here, that right now it's unlawful to possess any hand scrape, dredge, patent tong gear that could be used to harvest shellfish on public or unassigned grounds within 100 feet of any oyster sanctuary. So hand tongs aren't included in this. So that was a regulatory change that we had made, I believe, in 2016 to allow hand tongs for just for transiting the area there. So right now the only gears that are prohibited in an oyster sanctuary are more efficient gears, such as the hand scrape there. I also forgot to mention there that I also included there in their packet a letter from Roger Mann of VIMS that sort of addresses this issue and the concerns that are raised with hand scrapes through sanctuaries, but that's there included. So Rex Shoals you're well aware of where it is there. This is how it's defined in that current regulation there. So it's well defined. It's one of the few oyster sanctuaries. There's only seven of them really, and this is the only one on this side that's clearly defined in this regulation. All the other sanctuaries are established just by the signage there, but this has been deemed by VMRC and other folks, including VIMS, to be such an important sanctuary that's actually included specifically and named in this regulation. So other sanctuaries, such as the ones in the Rappahannock and other areas, those are not spelled out by coordinates and regulation. They're actually established as sanctuaries by the signage there. But Rec Shoals is in regulation, and it's clearly marked on nautical charts. It's on our VMRC web app. At the previous SMAC meeting when we were discussing Rec Shoals, there was a unanimous vote to add more markers and among other things, and VMRC felt that currently it's marked about as well as you can mark it, and if you're going to add more markers, you're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to be a certain size, there's going to be a certain cost to them. It's marked on Coast Guard charts right now with, you can count them right here, so there's, these are the markers that are maintaining the sanctuary right now. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 VMRC private aids navigation out there, and the additional navigation buoys. So it's well marked. This is a NOAA chart. So this is on your chart plotter. Everyone knows where this sanctuary is. It's marked. This is the most current up-to-date one. So there's really no way that we can mark this any better than it is now, other than just putting stakes everywhere. So that was why the agency chose not to add additional pilings. It was sort of staff's belief and VMRC's belief that basically you can't really mark it any better than it is now unless you start maybe even impeding navigation by putting more poles out there. So it's clear where it is. These are similar to what we presented last April there, but this is, the sanctuary has already been shrunk a number of times, so its original size was, it came all the way down to the bridge, close to 20,000 acres, and it was shrunk to around 5,000 acres. And its current size is right around 700 acres or so. So it's been considerably shrunk in size for some of the concerns that SMAC members had about, you know, the area being, at its original size, it may have been an impediment to navigation, but right now it's only about a mile and a half across. So it's been considerably shrunk since its original establishment there. And just for some background, I kind of wanted to stress the importance that we all know the James River has to the overall oyster fishery. So these are numbers pulled from 2013 to 2016 of statewide oyster harvests. And you can see in blue here that the James River accounts for 1.2 million bushels of market oysters, compared to 1.6 million for the whole rest of the state combined. So this is sort of an important demonstration of what a driver the James River in particular is, as we all know, to oyster harvest across Virginia. And that doesn't even take into account the amount of seed oysters that are transported to private ground in Virginia as well. So it really is the workhorse of, I'm not discounting any of the other tributaries, other rivers out there, but the James is a very important system. And Rec Shoals, is it a part of that important system? This is, you may be familiar with the VMRC maps that outline the sanctuary areas if you pull them up on our regulation. The Rappahannock River maps that look similar to this, those were sanctuary areas, whereas this is actually a marked sanctuary. So those are areas that were closed to harvest, and at the January Commission meeting last year, the full commission addressed that issue, and we did adjust those sanctuary maps so that there wasn't this, it's impossible to transit the area. We didn't do anything with the Rec Shoals sanctuary at that time. The full commission felt that this area at that time, that was before the SMAC meeting in April, didn't cause any of those same concerns that were going on with the sanctuary at the time. So that's sort of a little bit of background on where we are now. And I guess the first thing would be to, I guess, review what SMAC's decision was last time, and at the last SMAC meeting when we addressed this issue, the vote was, I believe, 8-1 to allow vessels with dredge gear on board to transit the sanctuary area if they had disconnected their dredge gear. That was the SMAC recommendation. The full commission at January meeting had addressed the issue. We submitted that report, including that SMAC recommendation, to the House Ag Committee and Chesapeake Bay Committee, and this bill still came forward again this year. So that report with your recommendation included went out, and this is where we are today. So I guess there's sort of two steps forward that we need to take here, and that's to decide ETHMAC's recommendation on whether or not VMRC should issue a permit, and if it's the conclusion that indeed ETHMAC would like to issue a permit or have VMRC work up, issue this permit. It would be beneficial for ETHMAC, I think, to have some input on what type of permit conditions would be necessary. So I have a couple that we could run through there, but basically it wouldn't just be a permit and anyone who wanted could apply for it. So I guess we could kind of open it up to discussion, and if there's questions, we can kind of go from there.
Andrew, what public bids are worked that are interfered with, that are dredged, that are interfered with the sanctuary?
I'm not sure if you can quite make out on this slide, but all of the hand scrape areas are below the sanctuary area. So right about where that arrow is there, mm-hmm. This is the hand scrape line. So this bar here kind of splits the hand scrape area, and it comes across right like that. So all of the public beds that are open to public harvest are well below the Rexroll sanctuary area. So it would be very, if there was any public harvester up that way, they wouldn't be headed to or from a hand scrape area unless they were docked way up the river. And most of them are coming out of Menchville here and a few from the beach area over here.
So you've already given the tongers the right to go through it. But do you have tong areas on the other side of the sanctuary, hand tong areas?
Yep, the whole yellow highlighted area here, this is Burwell's Bay mm-hmm. area, is all open to hand tong harvest. Right. And they can transit the sanctuary currently.
Mm-hmm. But as far as the public resource is concerned, there's no one who's inconvenienced at all by the sanctuary.
I can't see that anyone would be inconvenienced if they were working public ground with a hand scrape.
Andrew, what's that right below the bridge there? Is that another sanctuary there?
This area here?
No, right across towards the shipyard. Right there. What's that?
That's a shellfish management area there. It's not a sanctuary, but it's a special management area there.
Okay, it was the same color. I thought maybe it was a sanctuary. Yeah. But that's not open for harvesting.
A good chunk of it is in polluted ground there.
Oh, okay.
And it's a clam management area as well, too. So.
Mm-hmm. One other question. I know we're talking about the Rexroll Sanctuary. Any discussion today, would that include the sanctuaries in the Rappahannock River also? Are we talking just this one sanctuary here is what we're addressing today?
I think we're going to try to just stick to Rexrolls here. I think
okay.
The commission addressed the areas there in the Rappahannock.
Okay.
As I recall, when we decided that the gear would have to be disconnected, as part of that would be a basket would be hoisted up to the boom, which would be further evidence that the dredge wasn't available to be pulled overboard.
Yeah, there was
that's what I recall.
Discussion on some sort of, having some kind of marking that you were fishing or you'd, in some way disconnected your dredge. So there was.
Well, I think sometimes with the guys going to the other side of the river, you know, it's to go around that an extra mile, especially when fuel was expensive.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would be.
And then plus sometimes what you have is you have the wind blowing a certain way, and it's, put yourself in harm's way with a boatload of oysters to have to go around something when it would be more appropriate to have your boat going a certain way because of the way the wind is.
Yeah, that was sort of the two major concerns that came from that ESMAC meeting were the inconvenience and whether it was...
Well, it's not so much just inconvenience, but could be safety as well.
Right. I was going to say the inconvenience and the potential hazard navigation there that having to maneuver around it would cause. And, there is always potential for a heavily loaded boat to have to go in a certain direction.
Well, I've been out there when the boat didn't have anything at all on it, and you want to watch what you're doing going, because all of a sudden you have a 75-mile-an-hour wind come up, and you want to go where it's appropriate for you to go rather than
I'm sure
the MPOs would recognize that issue, but, I think we should, too.
No, I that recommendation and that reason for concern was included in the report that went to the Ag Committee there, and it does make that same point that there's always some discretion that the MPOs all the way up through the court system has, and you know every mariner knows that your number one priority is you know safety of your vessel, life, and property.
What issues have come up, you know, with people stealing oysters in there? I mean, is with the dredges? How? I'm sure you have records of that.
There are. I don't have them on hand. The number.
But
of people.
I mean, just that is an issue, and it's inappropriate. Any stealing, period.
Right. I mean, any stealing of oysters. I mean, it's a felony in Virginia.
Yeah, whether they steal it on there or steal it somewhere else, it's the same.
Mm-hmm. Right. But this is, I guess, with Rec Shoals there, with the added protection of the sanctuary regulation as it's written now, that in order to get a conviction on oyster poaching, particularly off public ground, a lot of times, it's my understanding that they'd actually have to witness oysters coming up, dredge gear overboard. Whereas you have an added layer of protection for this sanctuary by just someone transiting the area with dredge gear. So the Marine Police don't actually have to see someone harvesting oysters if they see a boat transiting the area and they can intercept them and they have dredge gear on board. And it gives it, if they have oysters on board, then they,
well,
you know, it gives them an added layer of protection.
It's wonderful that you say that, but Jim Wesson can verify this, but Billy Moore was over there working in a squash, which was outside of that sanctuary, and he was catching oysters big time, wasn't he, Jim? You remember that? And so the point that I'm trying to make, there's other areas over there that oysters are just as damn abundant, and Jim will tell you that.
No, I mean,
so why would it be more egregious to go in that sanctuary and get them when you can go outside of that, you know, a quarter mile and do the same damn thing?
Well, I'm not saying it's any more egregious, but just because it's, I guess the answer is this area is closed to harvest, so it has an added layer of protection that, you know, I don't think you're advocating calling everything else in the James River.
No, I'm just telling you, that whole area over there would be closed to harvesting with the dredge.
No, it is, yes.
Well, so it's not like...
Well, if anyone was going to or from that area with the dredge and they didn't have a permit to dredge somewhere upriver of there, they could be held in violation the way that the code is currently written. So
I know it's an issue and I know it's a problem. I've had problems on my ground with people stealing. So I'm just saying that whole area over there, regardless of where that sanctuary is just the oysters just as abundant over there with the dredge. You go over there with the dredge and you can tear them up.
And that's one of the reasons why we don't want Rec Shoals to be torn up.
Well, I'm not just talking about Rec Shoals. I'm talking about all the other areas that are around that. Mm-hmm. Is you're leading everything to that sanctuary, and I'm telling you right now that areas outside that sanctuary, the oysters are just as damn abundant. That's what I'm telling you. Jim been right over there and seen it. Well, we've sitting over there catching all those oysters with Billy Moore. Well, it's not like I'm making this up.
No, I'm not saying that they're not abundant up there. I'm not denying
But the point is the whole works is a problem, not just that. Mm-hmm. And it's a stealing problem, and it's not...
Well, I guess the issuing of a permit right now or allowing this would make that problem potentially worse in general. So not just areas that should be closed, but it's one more permit and one more area, and mm-hmm. it's sort of a... If you issue a permit and you see a boat crossing the sanctuary and they have a permit and they have oysters on board, or it just sort of muddies the waters even further up there. And as you pointed out, it's already an area that has problems.
The guys would sit, there are people over there that have no integrity, would start putting a dredge out the middle off of Marlboro Island and dredge all the way to the upper end of Marlboro Island and turn around and come back with a load of oysters. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that was going on.
Well, I
mean, and it had nothing to do with the sanctuary.
Right.
Of course, the sanctuary is an issue too, but you're focusing strictly on the sanctuary, and it's the whole area is a problem.
Well,
and they were just over here the last meeting. They were talking about the problem up there in Maryland, where the people with the Maryland boats were coming in there and stealing oysters off of Virginia, and it's a problem because it's difficult to sit there and watch these people and catch all the thieves. You can't be everywhere.
Right, and for that reason, this gives an added ability for VMRC to catch people who might be potentially bad actors. So if there's someone who's dredging ground up there, they might be transiting it with, and it's. I understand your concern in the whole area there.
So in other words, if the thief goes around the sanctuary, he's more apt to not be investigated by MPOs because he's going around the sanctuary. That's what your position is.
We have to leave that up to law enforcement. So I think this you painted a pretty good picture.
Oh, I know I painted a good picture, and you got people right over here that will substantiate it. I can tell you that right now. Well, we had that last meeting, or one of the meetings, where it was agreed that the dredge would be disconnected and there would be a basket hoisted up on the boom, which would give further evidence from long distance away that the dredge wasn't able to be hooked up and pulled to harvest. That was what we had decided and what we voted on. What happened to that?
It moved again through channels all the way through the legislative process, and it's come back out. And now we have to decide on it again.
Well, so is that
by deciding on it again, it just means that as an advisory committee, we do want your advice. Your advice is to the commission ultimately, but there will be feedback from Commissioner Bowman based on what you come up with back through the same channels that this came down. So it's a situation that it's come the same time.
If a permit's issued to somebody, they can just run right through there with all their dredge equipment hooked right up. Is that what you're saying?
I don't think it ever got to that. I agree.
Well, what I'm talking about is what we had agreed upon is the dredge is disconnected. You've got a basket hoisted up on the boom where it's evidence that dredge can't be pulled. And an MPO can see that from a mile away.
Yeah.
Which is just as good as you say. You got the darn poles marking the ground that are over a mile apart, and if he can sit over there and make a determination that the boat's inside the ground with the poles over a mile apart, why can't he determine if he sees the basket hoisted up on the boom? I don't understand. I don't understand what's deficient in that agreement that we made here. So is that means it can't be put through again, or?
You see, you make those type of statements. Is it appropriate to ask you this advice recommendation? Unfortunately, not because of your efforts, because you all showed up tonight. But really, when you think about it, that didn't seem satisfactory to some. So,
well, I mean, that's the kind of rig they got with the scallop boats working out there in the ocean. They have everything disconnected, and they've got evidence that the dredge can't be pulled, and that's all federal.
Right.
And I don't understand why it won't work.
I think I'd be happy if you look at Danny Marshall's letter.
Well, I did. I read it.
And that's what we should talk about. And let's hear from everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll bring that information first back to the commissioner, and then we see where it goes from there. I think we have to do tonight. Mm-hmm. Part of the other situations, I think there has been progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well.
There has been progress.
I'm sorry for my ignorance. Exactly who is this inconveniencing by leaving it the way it is? When they're exiting the creek to get to the private grounds? Are they looking to save time? Or I understand what the gentleman said about the wind, but this boy was 75 mile an hour. We'll get some notice about that, I would think. But I'm more, is it a time issue because of the private harvest restrictions? Is that what they're...
There's been brought up by, I'm only aware of a couple individuals that have had any issues with this currently. So it's been brought up as a time issue, presented to Delegate Hessel there, and the advisory committee brought up some other issues in terms of the navigation and just the inconvenience of it. So I guess it's a matter of opinion as to inconvenience, I guess. So
like inconvenience, like going around the sandbar if it was there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I mean, it's very similar. Like a sandbar, there's any mariner knows there's areas you can't drive a boat, mm-hmm. and this is one of those areas.
But the other thing is the time, is the timing from the time they leave the dock till they get to the where they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
It could shave off a little bit of time. If
right.
They were able to pay
yeah, I think that on the long end, I think you estimated if it's a mile and a half at its widest and you sort of do your fully loaded boat speed, I mean, fully loaded down, you're looking at round trip at most 45 minutes if you're just mm-hmm. crawling along at, you know, a couple knots, you know, going, it's only a mile and a half to go mm-hmm. around.
Yeah.
45 minutes both?
Round trip.
Round trip.
You're going out empty, you're coming back full, assuming.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, I think, I mean, certainly John and I don't agree on a lot of things, but we've been friends for a long time, but, you know, he's pointed to one thing, and that is we're having trouble outside of the sanctuary. If we have, the only way that an MPO can get a conviction in the sanctuary if the boat has oysters on it and has a dredge on it is to not allow a boat to go through the sanctuary with a dredge on it. And, you know, if we go back in history and start looking at what's taking place in this state, 1986, a lot of oysters died in the state of Virginia between 86 and 88. And, you know, in I guess we had the Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel in 1988. John, you served on that, I think, didn't you?
Oh, shoot, I can't remember what all these things were called.
But anyway, that one was, you know, came in with a lot of different ideas. But in the early 90s, when Jim Weston came on board, we started building reefs. We started doing things because we didn't have an industry. Our industry was gone. What I can understand, about 7,000 bushels in the early 90s were all we were harvesting in the state of Virginia. And now we're up between 250 to 300,000 bushels a year. We've done sanctuaries. We've done a lot of things. I sat on commission for almost 9 years, and we had a lot of discussions where, you know, let's go catch what's there. And certainly, I think the more astute thing was we better try to preserve this resource that's there. Even if there's a small amount of inconvenience, we need to preserve it. You know, you've got an exponential growth in the industry. Thank goodness, a lot of people are making a living out of it. Is the sanctuary the responsible thing that did that? We can't say it is. We can't say it isn't. But I think it's necessary that we protect these sanctuaries. We shrunk this thing from 20,000 acres down to 700 acres. I mean, it's not like they have to go 5 miles, watermen do, to get around them. We need to protect these areas. And as John said, the guys are dredging up and down inside of it. MPO stops them. Well, I caught these on my private ground. You know, but if they catch him in that sanctuary with a dredge, then he's going to be guilty. Hopefully he's going to be guilty when he gets to court. As far as the disconnects to the dredge, it doesn't take long to reconnect the dredge. What happens if you have a stumping block? I mean, you don't have anything that you can hoist up your mast. And, you know, it appears to me that certainly these areas are, they're places we've got to protect. And it's not just, I mean, it's for the watermen's. If you look down the road 7, 8, 10 years down the road, if we have sanctuaries and if they're functioning properly, then we have oyster live in the water. We continue to have strikes. The James River, well, you showed the figures a while ago. James River is the biggest producer in the state of Virginia. And that's the reason that this area is so important. I think, you know, John talks about illegal harvest, and we have illegal harvest. We all know we have illegal harvest in Virginia. That's what we're concerned about, is the fact that if you allow dredges to go through this area, you're going to have more illegal harvest in the area that you have your broodstock in. And that broodstock is going to, when that's caught, you know, how much do you reduce it? It's probably going on already, maybe under the guise of darkness. We used to have to not leave the dock half hour before sunrise. Now it's 1 hour before sunrise. And, you know, I'm told that you can get from Deep Creek to Deepwater Light in an hour. Is that right, John? depends on...
Well, it depends on the speed of your boat. The
speed of your boat, but if you can run up there...
My boat won't go that fast.
Yeah, but, you know, if you're going up the river and you leave an hour before sunrise, a lot of things can be done before that. A lot of things are done at night. I mean, Mike Morris caught a boat 3 years ago coming down the river at 2 a.m. in the morning, no lights on, with 40 to 50 bushels of oysters.
There you go.
You know, I mean, this is going on. So it just appears to me that, you know, we're allowing hand tongers to go through it. It's not a tremendously big area anymore. And we've got to look out for the resource in the state of Virginia. And by looking out for the resource in the state of Virginia, we're looking out for the watermen in the state of Virginia, even though some of the watermen don't agree with that. So I think it would really be, and I went to the legislature and stood up and opposed it. But I truly think that it would be a mistake to allow dredges at all in this area, because you would end up with an unenforceable sanctuary. And it could cost everybody in the state of Virginia that's making a living in the oyster industry now, down the road it could cost some of their livelihood, or if you work this thing strong enough, it could cause the James River to go back to the point where you don't have oysters on Thomas's anymore to dredge in the wintertime. You don't have as many seed up the river that you can catch in the wintertime or during the season. Or John may not have as many oysters on his shore to catch during the summer and the winter. But I'm not in favor at all, as a member of this committee or a member of the industry, of allowing dredges to be in this area.
I appreciate your input there. Yeah. Is there anyone else who wants to comment on that? And sort of just to add on that, it's one of those, you brought up a good point that it's you don't know that for sure wreck shoals is a driving factor behind the success of the James,
mm-hmm.
but if you gamble wrong and we ruin it, that could hurt a lot of people that are participating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of. You know, when you look at it, a permit, I mean, how would... If someone gets a permit, how would the MPO, the Marine Police, how would they still know that whether someone had a permit or not and allow them to cross over the sanctuary? I don't see how they would be able to make that distinction out there on their boat in the river, you know. It would certainly look like me, it would certainly be difficult for them to distinguish between who did have a permit and who didn't have a permit. Say it's 100 boats out there that get permits to cross over there, you know. I mean, how would this be enforceable? I mean... It looks like it would be something that would be very difficult to do. I'm not sure that's really the answer to it, you know.
Andrew, one more thing I'd like to add, and that is there's no regulation that doesn't say you can't drop your dredge and buoy it off before you go through that area. Weather gets bad and you want to go through it, you want to go legally through it, drop your dredge, buoy it off. Joe Neal told me, I asked him the question this morning, said, Joe has had a lot of experience on the Tones River over the years.
That's what he had to do it, yeah.
And he's had, and he knows a lot of people have had a lot of experience at night on the Tones River, dredging oysters years ago. But I said, Joe, what do you do when you drop your dredge? How do you go back and find it? Do you put a buoy on it? He said, well, you might put one of these little gill net buoys on it, but he said the best way to do it, and of course now you've got GPS, you've got a lot of ways that you can locate it, and if you're doing it legally, you can drop your dredge and put a cork on it and go back and pick it up. But he said what the industry used to do was put a 100-foot line on it and then put a chain on the end of the line, and then the next day they come back with a grapnel and go drag through that area, catch the line, pull the dredge in, and go back dredging. So, you know, I mean, it's not like the guys that want to go through there can't go through there by buoying their dredge off on the other side on their private grounds and go through. I mean, that could be done easily. And somebody, if they're going in this area, can catch the cost of a dredge in a couple, probably within an hour. So it's, you know, I don't think it's insurmountable if the weather gets bad. If I was out there, I'd either buoy my dredge off, or I'd take a chance on getting a ticket and go on to port, and chances are the MPO is not going to be out there anyway. So I just think that we've got to protect this resource in the state of Virginia. And you know, down the road 10 years, the watermen hopefully will have as much resource, if not more, than they have now.
Well, I agree with that. I'm just telling you that the resource is a whole lot bigger than that little sanctuary, and Jim Wesson will verify that because he knows. Because he was out there when we were sitting there catching them, tearing them up.
They're all around that, just as thick. And it's just
amazing how few officers are on patrol. So
I understand. That's why I'm saying if it's something that you can do on that boat to make it absolutely obvious that you can't be dredging.
Well, I think there's an idea, at least that I'm hearing a little bit, that if you're worried about poaching, then are you either adding to that problem or taking away from that problem by this rack shoal issue? If you keep it the way it's been, are you adding a problem for law enforcement or taking away a problem?
I think that's part of their responsibility to make sure that nobody's taking oysters from where they're not supposed to be taking them. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to make sure that everybody understands that little area that's the sanctuary, they're just a stick outside of that. I mean, the only people that are allowed to go over there and catch those is with oyster tongs, and you can go to a place where oyster tongs have only worked to put a dredge over there, and you need to catch every 60 seconds, catch 5 bushels. I mean, it's no problem. Jim will tell you. He's been right there and seen it. I mean, the dredge that we used on that boat to catch those oysters like that is on my boat now. There's no problem to catch oysters like that outside of the sanctuary, and they're just as abundant outside of it as they are in there. And just to me, to make it obvious to the NPO that he can look over there and see that boat couldn't be pulling a dredge because his mast pole has got the lines tied up to it. It's, to me, that would be a wonderful thing if it's that critical. And I don't want to see any stealing going on at all. I plant 50,000 bushels of seed every year right now. I don't need to see that.
I guess currently right now they can look out, and if there's any boat in the sanctuary, they know they shouldn't be there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of...
It's black and white. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's
kind of... What you're saying there is...
And I'm sure you're just as well aware of this as I am, but I've talked to NPOs, and they said they had such a major problem up there in the Rappahannock with the guys with these Hondas and Suzukis that are so quiet you can't hear them, and they're sitting there dredging at nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's... And they can do that everywhere. These motors are so quiet, you don't even know they're running.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll go over there and have to restart. I'll think the motor's not running, and I'll try to start it again.
I know.
And there's mm-hmm. I'm sure you know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we're going to... The task at hand is still, I mean, those are all valid.
Well, I mean, it's just to sit there and limit this action to that one little special area is what I'm saying is wrong, because that whole area over there, there's hundreds of acres, thousands of acres outside of that that's just as big a problem.
Right, right. Well, I'm not sure any basket for transiting to the sanctuary would help address that issue that is an issue that you talked about there. So I think we got to try to keep this narrowly focused on the task at hand, which is to address...
Well, that's the whole problem. I don't like to see a narrow focus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't want a narrow focus. I want a broad focus for the whole area.
Right.
Okay? Yeah. Narrow doesn't get it.
And I agree with John to a certain extent. I know we're focusing on wreck shoals, but we have problems in the Rappahannock also, and I know that's not part of the topic tonight, but I'm really not in favor of addressing one specific sanctuary. I think it's a problem with all the sanctuaries, you know, and I think we're just confusing and compounding the issue if we just address one sanctuary.
I'd love to talk about the York Row if y'all want to, but that's not what we're doing. If I go back to what Rob had mentioned, if the two questions, I'm real ignorant about some of this stuff, but the poaching is the issue with a lot of cases and the tributaries that we're all talking about. So if we're looking at the inconvenience of a couple people versus the enforcement side of the helping to alleviate some of the stress from the law enforcement arm of this, I don't think the juice is worth the squeeze. You know? So leave it alone.
Well, I'm a staff guy, but I can't help saying that, you know, you watch this in 2005 with the scrape, and then you watch the growth of the industry that Mr. Cowher has talked about, and I don't hear that there's a lot of trouble making limits. I don't hear that very often. So, you know, Andrew, when he first talked, he was about to say safety, but he also said convenience, but it shouldn't be about that at all. I mean, limits are being made on a regular basis. And so, you know, that's a good thing. And, you know, it just doesn't seem reason to keep working on these issues that you're concerned with, but it is the fact that tonight our comments that go back will be about wreck shoals and how you feel about this issue of having dredges, even if there are restrictions like tying them up, permits, anything else. So
if there's consensus, it doesn't seem like there's really consensus right now on whether or not a permit in general is even appropriate here. So I guess to sort of proceed here, I guess it might be helpful to sort of, I don't know if we have an informal vote, but sort of we can talk about recommendations on issuing a permit, or we can take the sort of consensus here on whether or not a permit at all is what can come out of this at next. So I mean, we can kind of take it in two parts and have a in favor of working on a permit.
I don't think you need to do that. I think we're happy to have your input, even if it's not a consensus. That's fine. And I know, Jackie, you may have some comments, and that might help too. And then that's what we're interested in, the comments. We had a FinFish meeting about a month and a half ago, and one of the fellows from the club got up and told the commission, there wasn't a quorum. You should have sent those people home. That's kind of ridiculous, because you're a standing member of the committee, but this doesn't have to be a quorum, and your information is valuable, and so we bring your information back to we've heard so far. Believe it or not, I'm a terrible note taker, but I'm taking notes. So all is good.
One other thing that I found to be kind of disturbing is that if a boat goes through, if you have a permit, hypothetically you can go through that sanctuary. But with that same permit, they can be sitting there going through the whole Rack Shoals area outside of that, and MPO said, well, they're not through the sanctuary, so we don't have to do nothing. And that disturbs me. That disturbs me. As I said before, there's just as much outside of that as it is in it. So that's very disturbing.
What I'm being told in other areas where we're affected, in other tributaries, the ability to convict a poacher that's you've got a just about seen doing it, and the MBO struggle when they get to the they charge them, they get everything, and you get a conviction. If you've got the sanctuary here, most people that I know that steal or have met in my life that steal, whether it be oysters or whatever, and the several businesses I've owned, once they're stealing, they tend to get a little more greedy. And they go for a little extra. It's kind of like anybody. It's just commonplace. So if you've got that sanctuary there and it's protected by not being able to dredge on it for any reason or any permit or anything, chances are they may be able to catch that guy on that one time, and that could eliminate stealing on the outside too. So, but if you let it open to a permit, then you're getting, you open yourself up to.
Yeah, well, that whole area is illegal to dredge.
I understand that, but if he's going through that with the dredge, you get him for that one. You might be the same guy that might have been stealing the ones you were talking about as well.
But if they steal the
normally they all stick together.
But if they steal the last oyster over that whole area that John's talked about, that sanctuary will still have rootstock in it to reproduce the river.
Absolutely.
And I certainly don't agree with stealing anywhere.
Yeah, I agree.
But, it's, that's a law enforcement problem, and I hope that law enforcement in James River will step up to the plate and take care of some of these issues that are going on. John sees it. He's down here.
I'm
on a regular basis.
He just told us there's just not sufficient MPOs to be able to watch all that stuff out there. It's, you don't want to do anything to limit. I just don't think it's appropriate to limit their scope of what they can do to just one area.
Well, this is
definitely don't want to increase their scope either.
This is just adding to their workload by taking away one of their enforcement tools, which is the sanctuary area. So it's a matter of if you...
Well, so they've always had the responsibility of watching that whole area, regardless of whether the sanctuary was there or not.
That's right.
Exactly.
I guess it's a matter of... Do you want to...
Can I say something, Andrew?
Yeah, go ahead, Dan.
I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. We don't have news travel up here. I guess I probably shouldn't even be open in my mouth, but just from somebody looking on the outside, looking in, I mean, this just looks like to me it could be all or nothing deal. We could each, it sounds like each individual could come up with something for this, that, or the other, and somebody else could knock it down, and it just sounds like to me it's either going to be all or nothing. You know, I think it's Blake, you were just saying about the guy that was letting the rope go with a knot of chain on the end. That's going to happen. I don't know that much inconvenience. I don't know where it's at. I know just as much about the English Channel as I do what you were all talking about, but I mean, it just don't seem like there's going to be a happy medium in this from law enforcement, from fisheries or industry, and from fisheries. It just doesn't seem like it's going to be. This could turn into the agent using the crab pots, and Rob knows what I'm talking about on that. For the oyster meat, we could talk about this for the next 7 meetings and not gain an inch. And it just seems like there's no middle ground. I understand. I mean, you know, it could be of safety or inconvenience, and I understand all that. But when you're talking about the law enforcement side of things, I don't. I mean, whether you will, if you make a way of going through it, you might be giving the thief a license to steal. And if not, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't know a whole lot about the IRA, but it just don't sound like to me there's a whole lot of middle ground.
I think that's a pretty good observation there, Dan. So, I guess it Dan's correct there. It seems like there's a split here in terms of, I mean, whether or not to have this permit, and whether or not, you know, to allow the transit, as we discussed before, in general. I mean, that the members of SMAC that were here at the last meeting did vote 8-1 to allow the transit there. So I think there was sort of the SMAC's advice at the time was to allow the transit through these areas, and staff wouldn't support that, I don't believe. So there is, you know, a little bit of that there that was presented to the commission in general there, and as Rob mentioned, sort of worked its way through up, and that's where we are back here today. To try to maybe make some headway there, I mean,
thank you. You know, I know this is a narrow focus, but as it's been pointed out, Rex Shoals is a very important sanctuary. It's the largest in the state. Is that correct? So I think any decision that's made will be precedent-setting. I'm frankly disturbed that some of the push for being able to traverse this ground is actually coming from people that don't use the James River. So you have to wonder what the agenda may be for any long-term implications if other sanctuaries are open for this type of allowance. I do feel like it would add more to an already stretched thin NPO force, and you know, we certainly don't want to undermine the safety of the watermen, but I've seen the commission be lenient towards adding or extending days on the season for inclement weather. I think that might be, I don't know if that would qualify as middle ground to the solution, but CBF is opposed to this proposal. And, you know, even though we're looking at a small area, I think it is a really important part of an overall blueprint that has made the James River such an important part of the industry. And it's important to continue to protect that investment and continue the sanctuary, the protection of the sanctuary, basically. Another thought, too, is that that might cover everything that I had at the moment. Yeah, it looks like I hit all my points basically for that. But, you know, again, not to undermine people's safety, but I just don't really see a reason that this would need to be open for any reason, frankly.
I'm not sure we've heard of any safety issues or anything like that in the River. But
exemption or an exception. And fisheries management over the years has made many exceptions and many exemptions that often the commission feels that, why did that happen? And I'll give you one good example, if I can diverge for a minute from oysters, but the commercial fisherman registration license, that was an exemption or an exception, that it is very easy to avoid a two-year delay to become a registered commercial fisherman. So I started hearing not too pleasant things about that in 2014 in different areas. And the problem was really with the oyster fishery, those new entrants, where did they go a lot? They went to the oyster. So in 2015, and it's never too late, the commission stopped those type of exemptions and returned the process back to where it was back in 1993. And you don't just get in now just by saying, I've worked the water my whole life and I need to be in the fishery. And then when you look at their information, they never had a license. You know, that's a good thing that happened. But realistically, anytime you have an exception or an exemption, it ends up causing problems for the track record that I've seen over time. And I think this isn't my take on this, I'm just telling you that overall, I've seen a number of times where that's what happens. There are good intentions on why you give exemptions and exceptions, but there's many times bad outcomes.
Rob, just to elaborate on that, I remember back in the late 90s, I guess it was, we sat here one evening until about 7 o'clock, and we had exemptions in the crab industry, and one member in particular, moved that we give this particular group an exemption. But when you gave that particular group an exemption, there was another group that was sitting right here waiting for exemptions as well. And before that night was over, we had almost 100 new entrants into the crab industry. And about 4 or 5 years later, the MRC and the federal government were buying back permits from the watermen. So I agree with what you're saying 100%. I think that it's a mistake to allow this because you have no way for law enforcement to enforce it, and you're opening up the door for a lot of issues across the state of Virginia in areas that should be protected in order to hopefully enhance this industry in the future. For the public watermen and for the private industry as well. But the private industry requires public watermen to work the resource, you know, somewhere along the line. If John's planting 50,000 bushels of oysters a year, somebody has to catch those oysters. And that's another waterman that's working outside of the public industry, probably in the summer months when you don't have a public resource. They're working to catch oysters that he planted and spend his money planting. But, you know, those oysters may not be there if we don't protect that incubator or that broodstock area that produces them.
Yeah, I really will. I see Ty Farrington. I know he went up and spoke on this up at Richmond, because I talked to him the morning before he went up there, and I really wished he would have made it here tonight, because I'd like to hear his ideas on, you know, why he thought that a permit or a stamp or a seal was an alternative to maybe being able to do it. But maybe he'll be here at the next one. We'll be able to find out what's going on. But one thing I would like to ask Andrew, before the next meeting, if we could get a list of how many violations we've had in the sanctuaries in the past year, and specific to wreck shoals, to see how, you know, how big a problem it is. Is that some information we could have? Okay.
And other areas as well.
Mm-hmm. To see how, you know, I think now, maybe 10 years ago, yeah, I think it might have been a little bit of a problem when the fishery first started. You know, 06, 07, when it first started to make the rebound. But at the present time, I don't think it's that big of a problem, I tell you.
Well, I think the one that I'm most aware of that was actually most recently came before the commission and was usually a repeat offender there, but mm-hmm. It was in 2016, I believe,
2015.
There was mm-hmm. individual with cotton wreck shoals, and they testified before the commission there in the January meeting
okay.
last year that they had caught close to 12 dozen or so bushels in Rex Shoal Sanctuary there in a matter of 15 minutes with a handspree.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, it's you know, you can catch $600 worth of oysters. I mean, you said so yourself there, how efficient these gears are and how many oysters there in a matter of minutes. So even if you do have a permit on board, there's just always, I'm not saying anyone's going to do it, but there's always that temptation. If you if you open that door a crack, then it's opening it up to that.
Well, would the permit be to the boat, or would it be to the individual?
Well, there's...
Or how would they know?
There's, you know, we could discuss possible permit conditions. There's no actual permit right now, so...
Well, just, you know, because if it's to the boat, you know, some, you know, the guy that normally runs the boat, he might have somebody else run it. And if he's got an aquaculture card, he could do that legally.
Right. If it was the commission's decision to task staff with issuing a permit, I think, you know, there'd definitely be some conditions. You would just say you apply for the permit, you can get it. You know, if at this meeting to sort of move past the sort of where we are now in terms of yes, no, some possible permit conditions, we could discuss that here and present that there. But I think it's, you know, it's a matter of who would you issue it? Would it be a vessel permit? Would it be to an individual?
One other thing that you might take a look at, too, I guess that you could look at this, but there are certain requirements that the scallop boats have to have to restrict the usage of their gear so that they can't be used in grounds that are inappropriate. I don't know what that is.
I think I'm not 100% sure on that, but they do, I believe, have tracking devices on board, so they know when they're...
Yeah, but regardless of that, okay, and you are right, they do have the trackers. But when they go through certain areas, they have to have their gear done something to their gear in a certain way where it can't be used.
Right, right. That would be, if that permit did go forward, that would probably be a good thing to have included in there. You know, that's anything that would make it less likely that you would fish that gear would be a good thing. But I think
that would be kind of redundant if this stuff is fixed where it can't be used to have a permit.
Well, if you fix it so that you can't use it, you want to know who's doing that and who's going through in there.
Well,
like
I
said, the enforcement issue of having everybody go in there.
The whole point is if you've got some kind of way that you can make sure that stuff can't be used where the MPO can look and tell there's no way that guy could be dredging oysters, that would be perfect. Because he could be a mile away and see that.
Do we have an idea of who we're aiding with all this? So Kathy's comment is one that introduced by individuals who don't work for Jinx. So the thought would be that they have talked to other people who said, gee, this would be a good idea if we could do that. And then how things work sometimes, the individuals who went to Delegate Council said, you know, we should be able to do this. But, I mean, do we really know who we are trying to assist overall? I mean, you know, you're out there.
Well, these guys that go out there and do that stuff at nighttime, they have no problem. MPOs will tell you. I mean, they can't be everywhere. I mean, if you had one MPO every mile of the river, all the way from here to Hog Island, you know, you just don't have enough staff to do it. And then you need to have three shifts. Don't know the answer to that. I mean, I'd want to get a permit for my boat, for my guys, but I'm just telling you, their guys out there, they could care less about it. They'll steal wherever they think they can get away with it. That's just the way it is.
We talked to Ty Farrington the day we were in Richmond for the hearing, and I thought Ty must have been one of the people that had ground on the other side of the sanctuary. He doesn't even have ground in Jayville. So, you know, I said, well, he said, well, there's some people that, you know, in my area, which I think was maybe Pocosin, that would like to see this changed. I don't know whether they have any ground in Jayville. And that's when I asked the question, well, where is the public ground that would be affected where these guys have to go through the sanctuary? And for dredging, hand scraping in the wintertime, there is no public ground that would be affected, where the water would have to go through the sanctuary. So, you know, those are the...
There you go. You done hit the nail right on the head.
So it's, you know, it's somebody wants to get in the sanctuary and not be prosecuted. And law enforcement, that's one tool they do have now. You've got a dredge in there, you've got a problem. And there are ways that you can, as I said earlier, you can drop the dredge. The other side, if you work in private ground, buoy it off, take your oysters in, pick the dredge up the next morning. On Friday, when you come in for the last trip of the week, you can run around the sanctuary and come in. You can ice in the summertime, give you longer to work. There are a lot of ways to work around this without having to go through a 700-acre sanctuary that used to be 20,000 acres. We had all this area protected at one time, but the guys can work it now. So, I agree. Where are the people that really need to have this happen, and or do they just want to have it happen so they can easily get in there? And John says you can catch just as many on the outside, but if they continue to catch them on the outside, there'll be more oysters in the sanctuary in a year or two because they're not working.
Point that you kind of look at the sanctuary not discrediting all the oysters that we know are outside of there, but as an insurance policy against that happening. So it's one of those, everyone would like to see zero poaching from private, public, no oysters from anywhere they're supposed to be taken there, but this is a tool that law enforcement has that exists currently in its form, and by issuing a permit, I think you're weakening that tool, and it's sort of, you know, it would be an almost unenforceable permit that you'd be issuing there.
I just hate to see any of the focus become more narrow.
Well, I think that's just at hand. I just hate to see that.
I can remember when I used to go out in the river and work, and I wouldn't even go out in the river and work till 2 o'clock because I'd get all the stuff done at my business first, and then I'd go out there in the river and catch seed oysters. And I remember coming to a meeting over here, and oysters were so bad, they made a rule that you couldn't work past 2 o'clock, and they said as soon as the oysters would get more abundant, we'll make it where you can work to sunset again. You know, I remember all those things because I've been here for a long time. But it's just, you know, to sit there and make things more narrow, and I can remember talking to people who said, man, the guys are working till 2 o'clock. They don't want to come back and work any later than that. I understand that. But For you to come up with these wonderful ideas to make your focus more narrow just seems to be inappropriate.
I don't know why you're saying that.
Because the areas outside that, the oysters are abundant.
It's only an issue for now. You know, and you were on the committee when the committee got upset about poaching to begin with several years ago and talked about how law enforcement wasn't doing enough. And law enforcement started to do more and more and more. The focus is still there everywhere else. Problems are still there too, but I think not as bad as they were.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is just for right now. It's not. The focus is there because this went through General Assembly. So we have to focus on that.
I just put
that aside.
It's just important to know, because a lot of people just don't understand the abundance outside of that. I know what's there.
I will go to sleep tonight.
And Jim Weston knows too, and he will tell you.
I know. You have been very
good.
And I think you need to continue to be that way. But I also think that there should be no one in this room who thinks that this is the focus of law enforcement entirely.
No. It's not. I'm not saying it's be entirely. I'm just saying the focus should not be limited to being so narrow. It should be more broad, the whole area.
It's been going on for 4 years.
Uh-huh. Good. That's good. That's good.
I would guess, and I'm not saying whether making a pronouncement on it, probably been of the 80 licenses that have been taken away, I imagine about 60 are related to oysters. Mm-hmm. And you know the rules have changed. If you don't know the rules have changed, what has happened through the General Assembly, if you have a violation now, you get your probation first in the fishery where the violation was. If you have a second violation, then you're talking about revocation of license. So there has been a change to the approach that the General Assembly brought down. And we have had probation cases on oysters since that happened in the General Assembly. certainly every day they have to look over the shoulder a little bit more.
We had a boat that was in Squash's hole steal it today.
Did you call law enforcement?
I think that call was made not by me but someone else. So I mean that's just maybe they'll catch them later this week. So I'm just telling you, it's just
keep up the situation that you're proposing tonight. I think we know around the sanctuary we've got problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not diminishing what they do, okay? I'm just concerned that staff will make a recommendation to them which will narrow their focus.
Now that
Well, I'm just saying. That's what concerns me. That concerns me.
The narrow focus was just for what we're discussing tonight. In
yeah.
general, I acknowledge that.
Because to me, it's just as egregious to be going outside of that area as to go in that area.
Right. No, I mean, it's a felony if you're harvesting oysters
mm-hmm.
with a dredge anywhere in Virginia. This is just
right.
extra protection for this area. That's an added tool that we don't want to take away from law enforcement. So they still have those tools that they have to enforce the other areas, that if you drop a dredge gear on closed bottom, that's currently not allowed by code. So this is an extra area that's protected just with a little bit more layer there. So taking away that layer, I'm not sure how that solves the problem that you've addressed very thoroughly here tonight. So it's not going to add focus just this area. It's going to allow them to catch bad actors, give them an additional tool to potentially get folks who may also be working in other areas that are closed. So if this area, those protections are taken away, you're making enforcement on those other broader issues that much more difficult potentially. So that's sort of the risk that you take by, you know, allowing this to transit their area.
Staff agrees with what you're saying. Don't worry about that.
Okay. Well, I know what's going on out there, or what has gone on out there. It's just it's a hard thing to get a grasp of when you have a limited budget to put the enforcers out there. So I understand that. I can't even look out for all my ground like I need to.
Andy, you want to get a straw vote of the members that are here as to what their feeling is tonight, whether we should leave it like it is or go farther with some way to talk about the sanctuary. I mean, John's comments are very on point. Obviously, there's a lot of activity that needs to be stopped, but certainly we're not talking about that. We're talking about the sanctuary itself.
Mm-hmm. I think that might be beneficial just sort of to move things forward a little bit. I'm chairing there. If that's a motion, is there a second there to have a straw vote on whether?
I'll move that we leave it like it is and not entertain the idea of dredging in sanctuary.
How many would like to leave it as it is?
I still think that we ought to resubmit what we agreed to before, where the equipment is disabled and there's a basket is hoisted up on the mast to signify that the dredge could not be used.
So
that's
what
we did.
What you have to do here is, since you're on the farm, what you have to do is do a strong poll. How many things should stay as it is? Let's do that first.
Well, I don't understand. Okay.
That there'll be no changes, that you know, there'll be no permits, that there'll be no
that'd be good. I'll go with it.
You do too?
Yeah.
Okay. You can't put forth the older committee recommendation because you don't have the committee tonight as a form.
That's what I think would be appropriate.
You can certainly come back with your information that you at least feel that should.
you're talking about now?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I...
and there's a... Dan, did you hear that on the phone there?
Yeah.
It was a...
because I really don't know a whole lot about it, but I still stand by my point. This is black and white, and you've been talking in the gray area for the last hour.
I got you. Thank you.
Well, to make it obvious to an MPO that the boat could not be dredging oysters, that the dredge equipment should be not hooked up on the boat, and there should be a basket hoisted up on the winch that pulls the dredge up, so it's obvious that a dredge could not be worked.
Nothing wrong with that. That's a minority opinion, only because you're the only one who said that. Are there others who wish to share that minority opinion based on what they did earlier?
Well, the thing with that is, and this is worth the gray area. I mean, if the MPO is from a distance away, I could rig up another shackle, just say a foot below my block with allowing tally to it, tally basket onto it, let my dredge go, and the basket's in the air, and the dredge is still in the water. I'm not saying what one's right or wrong, but I'm telling you, I mean, it just sounds like you're either got to go black or white. There's no gray area.
One thing that you might want to keep in mind is the poles that mark that sanctuary are just as far apart as you just described, a mile apart. So if having the poles that mark the sanctuary being a mile apart is sufficient to mark that, it certainly should be obvious for an MPO to be able to see somebody not having his boat rigged up where he can't catch the oyster from a mile away.
I'm happy to report that if this could be done in a way obvious to law enforcement that the dredge issue was, as before, hoisted up, there was a permit, there was a way that law enforcement could identify that situation, that's what you really promoted. And that's fine.
Thank you.
But that's all work.
Good.
Andrew, what else do you have?
Well, I guess since there didn't seem to be any favor to discuss any permit by everyone here. Mm-hmm. We don't really have to discuss the possible permit conditions. So that was the, if that does come back, just to go forward with what that recommendation was there before. Really the only thing, Breck Shoals, why that pretty much covers the agenda for Breck Shoals. I mean, we have a pretty good discussion here, I guess. A lot of back and forth, I guess. We've heard both sides of that very thoroughly here, I think. So, I just wanted to give a update.
One other thing too. I'm sorry to interrupt your thought, but it was brought to my attention today that the marking of a lease, that there needs to be poles at a minimum of 600 feet apart. And I mean, all my leases that we've had there, we've had them for decades, and it's never been an issue. But all of a sudden, it became one today. So, you got a mile between, you got a mile space marking the perimeter of the sanctuary, but all leases are supposed to have 600 foot.
Well, I guess the difference in particular with the sanctuary is we're allowed to mark it with much larger signage than a lease, so you can't drive full-size pilings to mark your lease corners. I believe you're limited to 3-inch poles or 2-inch PVC or
up to 3, I think.
Up to 3 inches.
Is that right?
Up to 3 poles.
No, 3 inches.
3 inches.
But you can have 3 poles.
Yeah.
On a corner.
On the corners, yeah.
So, I mean, I guess it's not really an equivalent comparison. And also, Breck Shoals is on a federal navigation.
So, what size is that pole that you're talking about that's so large appear to be at a mile away?
I mean, it's a standard size piling.
So when you're looking at that pole from a mile away, how what size does that appear to be?
The size of a standard size piling.
I guess I'm not very articulate here.
I bet at a mile away that pole doesn't look no bigger than this pin does right here.
Right, but you can still see the pole. Yes.
Yeah, but it's about the size of that pin.
A mile away.
But if there was a piling or a pole stuck every 600 foot, would that not be more obvious?
I think there might be some issues that any of the pilings that we drive out there, we have to go through Coast Guard approval as private agent navigation. So particularly along a federally maintained channel right here, we have some concerns with that amount of pilings in the water, because you can still transit this area, any boat can, without any dredge gear on board. So we'd be sort of impeding navigation there, and also there's considerable expense in driving these pilings. So it's not like putting a piece of PVC pole out there. I mean, you're looking at...
There used to be over there back in the 70s, over there in a Swashes area, where they would have pilings sitting over there with anchors on the end of them. And the guys, there was like areas that they could work and areas that they couldn't work. And they'd go with a boat, and they just hook a rope up to that pile, and they just pull it where the hell they wanted it to be, and then they work where they wanted to work.
Well, we can definitely.
But I'm just saying that's the way it used to be.
Right. Well, we can definitely bring that to the commission that there has been this recommendation to increase the number of markings out there, and you know, there's always an associated cost. It would be nice if we had our own buoy tending fleet and go out there and have a piling whenever we wanted, but. But
it's just an issue that I ran into today, you know, and I've having that piece of oyster ground that we've been using for decades and decades, and it's 50, 60 foot of water, and trying to put something 600 feet apart is just like a miracle.
Right.
Yeah.
I believe, Ben, that you can just mark the area that you're working there as well, too. Isn't that
correct?
We've had a discussion.
Okay.
Yeah, we've discussed it. To me, it's pertinent for this as well. You know, if it's too expensive and too costly and too cumbersome to sit there and do it for that, why should it be that way for me? Is what I'm saying.
Right. I guess, well, I don't want to get into the private ground too much, but this is sort of the everyone's oyster sanctuary, not just your own private ground. So,
I understand.
Yeah. Is there any more discussion on the rec shoals that you want to have this evening before I just want to give a quick update on James River seed and sort of that'll probably come through SMAC before the next harvest season, but on the seed quota that we reached this year, just sort of let everyone know.
Yeah, cool. What was caught this year?
I'm going to go, Andrew.
Okay.
Looks like we're getting ready to get a storm, and I'm left everything open to the cry about it, so you all
have to do. All right, take
care.
Yeah. Is there anything on wreck shoals before I'll cover that? Okay. This is just a preliminary estimate of mandatory reporting right now and the call-in system. So of the 120,000 bushel quota, this is 112,000 bushels approximately has been reported as caught. So we basically projected and hit the quota this year. So there's still some reports coming in, but these are sort of the numbers that we're working with now. So that's what we can actually count as of today officially through MRC, but our projection was pretty close.
How much of that seed went out of Virginia, Andrew?
I don't have an exact number there. There's many buyers were buying for themselves in the state when it was called in, so we haven't done a buyer audit yet to determine that. But anecdotally, there was demand out of state for 60 to 90,000 bushels of seed.
Is that acceptable?
That's the reason that we have this quota, was in part to address the out-of-state demand for seed to prevent large quantities from leaving the state.
Is that allowed for going out of state the whole season or just a certain part of season?
Currently, the quota is broken up into two parts. So there's a fall quota of 40,000 bushels, and then whatever is left plus 80,000 bushels in the spring is to the 120,000 bushel quota total. So it's scheduled to close. If you hit that 40,000 bushels early, then we can close.
So out-of-state purchases can be made any time?
Yeah, currently the way the regulation sits. So.
Is that suitable?
We had an attorney general's opinion on what we could do in terms of you can't just say no, you can't, the way the code is currently written, send seed out-of-state, but there's... we can make adjustments to how the quota is managed, but I don't think we can currently be sort of state-specific.
Well, could you know, you have that rule of the Bianca tank where people can get seed, but they have to replace it with shells.
Mm-hmm.
Could that be done without a state purchase?
Well, I kind of wanted to save the James River seed quota as sort of a agenda item for another night. I just wanted to, it'll be pretty extensive, I think. So I just kind of wanted to provide a quick update to the folks here on where we sit with that and let you know our sort of rationale and why it was closed and that we still are confident in our projection.
So tell us what that means. So
okay.
Estimated and mandatory reporting, what is the trend in previous years as far as what we have now compared to what we end up with? Do you expect we're going to be more than 120,000 when we're done?
I'll run through that real quick right now. It looks like we probably will be when all things are said and done. So this 36,000 is what was called in over the fall. So from October to November, this is the, if you have a James River seed permit, you're required to call in on fisheries tracking system to report your harvest within 24 hours. So this was what was called into that system in the fall. After there's some lag with the monthly reports that everyone sends in, so those aren't daily, they're not part of this quota monitoring system. So according to the reports that were submitted for October, there was an additional 12,000 bushels of seed that were reported caught that were not called in to the fishery tracking system, which is actually a violation of the regulation as it's written. So as a result, we actually, most recent numbers did end up exceeding that 40,000 bushel quota in the fall, so we didn't close it. We had a projection that was more closely based on just the call-ins there. We just went a little bit over there. So what's called in so far this spring has been 61,000. 827 bushels has been called in. And like I said before, there's a considerable lag, about 2 months between that mandatory report and coming. And just based on that, there's an additional 2,000 total that's come in. So this 112,000 bushel number here is what we can actually account for in a combination of mandatory reporting and the fisheries tracking call-in system there. This is sort of where we came out last year and sort of helped us make this projection more accurately. Is based on that call-in amount, there was 77,000 bushels of harvest last year, and that translated on the mandatory reported amount to close to 110,000 bushels. So you can see there's a significant under-report on what was called in. And it's, you know, there's some folks that, you know, had better reports on their monthly report. They might have forgot to call in a couple days, but that can add up to substantial under-reporting. Right now, the total call-in amount is close to 100,000 bushels just on the call-in system. And if you take that current call-in amount and use the same sort of 1.4 times higher on mandatory reporting, this is sort of the projected amount that, you know, if the under-reporting was exactly the same as it was last year, we'd anticipate that 137,000 bushels has been harvested as of the close.
Andrew, what do you qualify as under-reporting? What do you think was never reported, or what was actually came in on mandatory forms that said, you know, I caught so many bushels on a certain day, but I didn't call them in?
Right, that the latter. So there were folks who didn't call the tracking system, but reported on their monthly form. So you can look at it and you can say, oh, they called in, you know, 4 or 5 days, but on their monthly reports, they might have skipped a few days here and there, and that shows up on the mandatory reporting.
That's on the paper reporting, right?
Yeah. So that sort of gives you an idea that it was probably that our projection was pretty accurate, and it was we probably have reached our quota by now.
So when you do have the subject of James River seed, James River clean calls, and so forth, when you talk with the James River, you're going to also include discussion on recommendations on whether the river will sustain more harvest than that?
That's correct. No, I've spoken with Roger Mann at VIMS and other colleagues there at VIMS about looking at whether or not the 120,000 bushel quota that we came close to hitting last year is in fact sustainable. So we kind of set that quota back in 2011. You know, things have changed a little bit in the James, but we can look at that, and we haven't come close to that quota. So at the time, there was sort of concern that Maryland would really ramp things up. That's sort of when all this talk started, and why we established that quota. And sort of last year and then rolling into this year is really when a large portion of that quota has started going out of state.
Will that include analysis of the rocks such as V-Rock, Horsehead, some of the places up the river, as far as the whether or not they're maintaining the height that they've been in the past or whether they're decreasing in height?
Yeah, no, all our patentong surveys have that shell volume there that you can translate to a height equation. Sort of 1,000 bushels gives you about 12 millimeters a year, or 12 millimeters in height, so we can sort of get a count of the volume of oysters there and tell you how high the brown shell volume or living oysters are, too. So we can see that shell volume is really what gives us
the
upper down.
If you see the shell volume decreasing, then you know that we're over-harvesting that particular rock, perhaps.
There is, as you've seen on our a downward trend currently right now on the shell volume and overall abundance in these areas after the 2016-2017 season. So we've got that really high peak right now, and we have already started to see a downward peak. There was a particularly high spat set recently in 2015, so there's not always usually one cause, but you can sort of see that downward trend there. It's something that VIMS can look at, definitely. Any other questions on that for now, or
what about the shells that were? Did the state plant any shells, or harvesting any shells, or is that not happening?
This year we'll still be the replenishment plan hasn't had any changes to it. We're still waiting on a final state budget in terms of the scale, but we're still planning on we put out a bid for the shell dredging contract there. And I've gotten responses for that, so we're still planning on proceeding. And just sort of the scale of the project will be dependent on the final budget numbers that'll come through here. Hopefully, I guess May 14th, I think they're going back into session.
What kind of cost did they set so far for the shale plant, the shales?
We're still negotiating the contract there.
So it's like between what and what?
Right, it's really area dependent there, but a similar cost in that. You know, $2 to $4 range, depending on area.
Is Langenfelder's I refer to it as Langenfelder's dredge, but the dredge machine that's been working for years, is that functional this year?
Yep, it's functional, and it's under new ownership now. They had a dredge company who's purchased it, and they're keeping it based here locally in Virginia, it's still being planned on put to use for shell dredging for the state this year. So the fears that it would go out of state and be chopped down into a mud dredge as of today have not materialized. So that's
is that for they figuring on dredging shells from upriver there or down below the bridge?
Where we dredged the last 2 years down below the bridge there.
How many more years of shell deposits do we have left if we maintain our current rate of removal?
So sort of long end estimate with the deposits that we know of now is in the 20-year range. So it's one of those, it really depends on if you ramp it up, but in that sort of 10 to 20-year range is sort of the best estimate there. So it's one of those, eventually, it's a finite resource, so if we get to a point where we're out of shells and areas aren't maintaining themselves, it's one of the reasons we need to continuously look at other alternatives or ensure that there's lots of broodstock and lots of spat sets out there to maintain the public grounds. And it is a concern that once you do run out of this fossil shell deposit, you know, we stop replenishing the scrape areas. You know, it's something that long-term we need to look at carefully there. So.
Andrew, has keeping the dredge in Virginia saved on any mobilization costs?
Like I said, we're still working out the fine details of the contract there. So. Is there any other questions or matters there? I think we'll look at another SMAC meeting in the next month or two, and maybe we can address some of the James River seed issues and start preliminary discussion on update on the replenishment program and get the season discussions underway. But is there anything that anyone would like to address here this evening? Or, most of the audience I know, so.
Well, I know that. I'm not talking about this.
Thank you
about the people.
Thanks for having us.
I guess what I always think, when there's a full house sometimes, we don't get some of the comments that we will hear when you get a chance to have some time with less than a full house.
don't mind talking.
We can adjourn then.